We shall turn now to the Word of God, to the book of Job, chapter 30. Job, chapter 30, where we can continue to consider Job's conversation now in the presence, obviously, of his so-called friends who were professing to be his comforters, but they were now silent, and so Job continues uninterrupted what is referred to as his parable, and in it he is referring to the way in which God has been dealing with him. And we have to remember that our attention is drawn to the fact of Job's patience. And in reality, because of this, we really learn something about what patience really is in the child of God. We might meet people of the world who would give the impression they're very patient and very long-suffering, and we might think that that is something that is simply natural to certain individuals. But the patience that God gives his children is different. It is a grace in itself. It's the grace of patience. And it doesn't exist apart from grace. It is different. And it is patience under trial. It is patience as God sovereignly works out his purpose in the sanctification of his child. And that's what we see particularly in the experience of Job. But here he is in the midst of all his trials, and now that his so-called comforters, who he says are miserable comforters, they are now quiet, and Job continues to speak. Now in chapter 29, we were looking at Job as he reflected, looking back, and as we read in verse 2, he was saying, "Oh, that I were as in months past." And he's expressing here the desire that he would be as it had been in the past. When the blessing of God appeared to rest upon him, he had God's blessing in his family. He had God's blessing in the gate as he administered justice. He had God's blessing as he influenced so many other lives. But as we said, it is always the godly that the devil goes in to attack and destroy, because that godly influence is against his kingdom, and therefore it is the godly man, the godly woman, that he will particularly seek to attack. And this is the case with Job. When we come to chapter 30, you'll notice how the chapter opens. "But now," in chapter 29, "Oh, that I were as in months past." Chapter 30, "But now." And what's Job doing? He's coming from the past into the present. And he's recognizing this. The past is the past. And however much I might like that it would return, or I might return to it, that isn't the case. I have to face up to the present. I have to now deal with the present. And that's what Job has in mind. So as he considers his present condition and state, and of course contrasts it to what it used to be, there are lessons that we may learn as we listen to him. And I believe the first thing that we should see, we should take note of, is that Job's changed circumstances, and he refers to them here, and he is conscious of them, but they teach us not to be trusting in uncertain riches. Remember how we began? Job is the greatest man in the East. And we've seen the various aspects of his greatness. He was great materially, he was great socially, he was great in administration, great in the gate, great in his good works, his influence on society. He taught others, he influenced others for good. But now all that has been stripped from him. But now, he says, it's all changed. And I have to deal with the present. I have to face up to the reality of my condition just now, what God is now pleased in my providence. Now they that are younger than I have made me in derision. And Job is noting how different it is for him, even in his relationship to others that he in the past had respect from and was given honor by. Now that's all gone. Now Job is having to face up to the fact. You go back in the book of Job and chapter 29 that we looked at last week. Verse 18, what's Job saying here? Then I said, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. When Job was in prosperity, it's like the psalmist in Psalm 30. He was prospering. God was good to him. If you look at it, the Psalm 30, what the psalmist is saying, he felt like the confidence that his prosperity gave to him. In verse 6 of Psalm 30 says, in my prosperity. You see, that's how it is with the child of God. We speak out of our experiences, out of our circumstances. And that's just what the psalmist is doing. He says, in my prosperity, I said, I shall never be moved. I am so prosperous, I'm so established, I'm so well off, I'm so well grounded. I don't have anything to concern me. I shall never be moved. I really feel confident and I really feel settled and I really feel established. But verse 7, Lord, by thy favor thou hast made my mountain to stand strong. Thou didst hide thy face, and I was troubled. All God had to do was simply just hide his face, and the whole scene changes. He recognizes, in my prosperity, I was dependent on God. In my prosperity, I was foolish to say, I shall never be moved, when all God has to do is just withdraw his countenance, and there I am, left in trouble. And that's what Job is learning here. He was prosperous in his past, and he's looking back. It would be good if I was able to go back to those days, but I can't. But I was so confident, I was thinking, well, I shall die. I live to be an old man. I shall multiply my days. And I shall die in my nest and my comfort. I've everything provided for. I've thought ahead and I've planned well. And everything's going smoothly. And then he says, but now. It hasn't worked out as I thought. It hasn't all come to fruition, no matter how well I thought and no matter how bright things actually looked. And here's Job now saying, it's very different now. And how quickly then, as Paul, when he's writing to Timothy, one of the things that he tells Timothy he's supposed to include in his ministry is to warn of the uncertainty, warn the prosperous people of God. Charge them, he says, 1 Timothy 6:17. Charge them, just don't mention it, charge them. When Paul is earlier speaking of the charge that is to a preacher, a minister of the gospel, he's charging before God and before the holy angels, and here he's dealing with something that is obviously very important. Charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, because they can be here today and they're gone tomorrow. And this is what Job has been learning. He hasn't, even at the beginning of this period of affliction, he wasn't even then fully aware of where he was going to end up, how deep his troubles were going to be. He didn't understand then where God was going to allow him to go down into the depths that he actually finds himself in. Paul says, Timothy, that's part of your ministry. Charge them that are rich that they be humble and not high-minded, and that they don't trust in uncertain riches, because they are very uncertain. They're here today, they're gone tomorrow, and they are to trust rather in the living God. And there's that tendency, just like Job, just like the psalmist, well, I didn't plan on losing anything. I didn't plan on things turning out the way they've done. I thought I was wise. I thought I was a good administrator. Job was a wise man. He could advise others. And everything looked good until God brought into his experience these trials that begun, and Job, when he began to experience them, did not realize, I believe, where God was actually going to take him in providence. Remember what Job is saying. We're told he sinned not with his mouth. He says, well, naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. Well, the Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away, and blessed is the name of the Lord. I have nothing to complain about. And he didn't. But when we come to these chapters, we find Job, and even his friends now are silent. They're not accusing him anymore. They're not seeking to defend God against Job. Job is now speaking without interruption, and he's making very strong statements. Not, I believe, in blasphemy against God, but you can see his sighs and his groans are bringing out of Job things that probably he never would have intended ever to say when he was in his prosperity. Never thought he would ever say them, but he does here in this chapter 30. But that's the first thing Job has learned: riches, greatness. Job's riches were of various kinds, and yet he seemed to lose everything, even respect. He here, in the beginning of the chapter, he draws attention, he speaks of those who were the lowest of the low in society. The very lowest. He said he wouldn't even have set them with the dogs of his flock. They were so low in society. They were such evil characters. He said the people drove them out of society, drove them out to the caves in the valleys where they would hide, and they would dig up juniper roots to survive, and people would treat them as thieves and vagabonds. And Job says, the very lowest of the low are now making me, he says, their song. As they're out there in the valleys and in the caves, digging for an existence, roots and a miserable existence, they even despise me. They look upon me even as lower than them. They make me their song. I'm actually their byword. It's as though if they want to curse, it's me that they would curse. I'm the lowest of the low in the estimation of the lowest. That's what Job is saying. That's where I've come to. It's difficult for us to be able to see and understand the contrast. What it used to be, what it is now. But God has a purpose in it, you see. And see then that as he continues and he speaks of his experience in the present, he is showing to us, demonstrating to us, how far Satan has the power, how far he can exercise that power. And I think we often fail to appreciate what he has the power to do. God had told Satan that Job was in his hands. He could do with him basically anything he wanted, but he couldn't take his life. Now he stripped him of his herds, his flocks. He stripped him of his family. He took away his health. He took away his very friends. He took away his influence. He took away his everything, basically. And yet, Job here is telling us something that is very easy to overlook. In the midst of all the afflictions, he comes to this. You see, three times in this chapter, he says, now. This is what it is for me now. There's no point in me going back over the old ground all the time, wishing, well, I wish it was like that, because it isn't. He says in the opening verse, but now, and then in verse 9, and now, and then again verse 16, and now. This is the reality. I can't fantasize, this is reality. But look at what he says, verse 16. Now my soul is poured out upon me. He doesn't say now my soul is poured out within me, but my soul is poured out upon me. It's as though this affliction has gone so deep into me that it's as though my very soul is falling out of me. Now that's hard for us to grasp how Job felt. How low he was in his own estimation, and how near he was to complete despair. Now he could say, yes, I know that my Redeemer liveth, and you can see his faith coming through. But you see here, in the midst of his afflictions, you see the rising and the falling as he expresses himself, the doubts and the fears. Because of what it really was. This is how it is now. If you go to James, it's interesting to see how the reference is made to Job. It's very interesting. James chapter 5, verse 11, behold, we count them happy which endure. And Job did that. Ye have heard of the patience of Job and have seen the end of the Lord. We see Job, but we're not supposed to look at Job in isolation from the Lord. That's what James, by inspiration, draws attention to. Yes, we see the patience of Job. Is that all we're supposed to consider? The patience of Job. But the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. Now that is in relation to the patience of Job. And you see what poor Job is going through. And it's as though it's wrenching the very soul out of him. He's no strength. His very mind is in a turmoil, as well as his body. He says in verse 15, terrors are turned upon me. They pursue my soul as the wind, and my welfare passeth away as a cloud. And he says, my soul, now my soul is poured out upon me. The days of affliction have taken hold upon me. I don't control my days now. My affliction controls me. I am now the slave to affliction. There's no escaping from it. That's what God has ordered in my providence. Now it's interesting to see that at the early part of the chapter you hear Job, they, repeatedly. What they did, what they thought, what their attitudes were, what they've done to me. But then when we come down to verse 19, he says, he hath cast me into the mire. They were the mere instruments, as it were, that the devil was using. But in verse 19, he changes. He hath cast me into the mire. You see, Job is realizing it's not just men I'm dealing with. The devil is certainly using them to afflict me. But behind it all, there is a sovereign purpose. He hath cast me into the mire, and I am become like dust and ashes. The dust and ashes were thrown out onto the paths that men walked on, footpaths. And what Job is saying, I've just become like dirt under men's feet. They walk over me, I'm just like ashes and dust. That's what I've become. No one has any respect for me. No one cares about me. That's how I am. But he hath cast me into the mire. He did it. Just that tiny little word. He. H-E. Again, you can see Job refers to God. Verse 20. Thou dost not hear me, and thou regardest me not. Verse 21. Thou art become cruel to me. Now we would be thinking, well, how could a man with grace say a thing like that of God? How could he possibly, if he was patient, if he was really a man manifesting the grace of patience, how could he even think that and say, thou art become cruel to me, and with thy strong hand thou opposest thyself against me? That's what Job was really thinking. He's an honest man. He's not super pious. He's not pretending. He says, this is how it is now. And my very soul has been affected. It has gone into me. And when Job is speaking about his soul, the faculties of his soul have been, as it were, infiltrated by the powers of darkness. God said he's in your hand. His understanding is in your hand. You can affect his mind. You can disturb his mind. The only thing you can't do is kill him. And here is very soul within him. Satan has made his attack upon that, so that out of Job is coming these strong expressions. Thou art become cruel to me. And you might think, well, how would a gracious man talk that way? This is why we mention, when we talk about the patience of Job, alongside of it is that very statement. We see also that God is very gracious. He's very pitiful and of tender mercy. And although Job couldn't see it, because his mind, his whole spirit, it's under attack. And Job is saying things that he wouldn't normally have said. He would have dreaded to say this about God. But that's how low he's been brought. But the thing is, God is very compassionate. And it's as though, in the midst of it all, God is saying to Job, I know why you're speaking the way you do, Job. I know why you're thinking what you think. I know why you're saying what you're saying, that I'm very cruel. Job, I feel for you. I really, my heart is with you, Job. My heart goes out to you, Job. You have all my compassion. But Job, I'm doing this. I'm permitting this. This has been ordered, Job, for a divine purpose. And Job, for my glory, and for your spiritual good, Job, you pass through these deep waters, and you pass through this furnace, but Job, I am with you. You, Job, have my compassion. My heart, Job, feels for you. But it's in my sovereign good purpose that I confound Satan, who expects you to blaspheme. And I feel for you going through these trials. But it's for my glory and your good, Job, and for the confounding of Satan. And that's something we can very, very easily forget. And we might be ready to be critical. And we might be ready to say, well, that man or that woman in their trials, they shouldn't talk that way. They shouldn't even think that way without appreciating how far down Satan can take one of God's children. And yet God will always be compassionate. And you see here in this chapter, as Job continues, he's speaking of the way that the ungodly have treated him, the lowest of society. They make him their song and they despise him. He's lost all his credibility. He's lost all his influence. Whatever way he turns, he just meets with more affliction and more trials, and he speaks of his bodily affliction so great that he has no rest at night. He can't sleep properly. The disease, whatever it is, his boils and the skin of his body is now so broken that his very garments are sticking to his body, and you can just imagine what an awful spectacle poor Job is. And yet God says, Job, you have my compassion. I am putting you through this, Job, that my name will be glorified, because Satan is going to be confounded. And sometimes we have to realize that. But then there is, you see, another thing that we should note in this chapter. I've already referred to it in part, the changing feelings of Job, his changing moods and feelings. He could say earlier, I know that my Redeemer liveth. And now he's saying, thou art become cruel to me. It's as though Job, he's been looking back in chapter 29 and he's been referring to all the good things he'd done, the charity he'd shown, the care for others, a tender heart for the needy, doing justice. And it's as though he's brought to say to God, in the light of my holy living, in the light of my godly living, what have I done to deserve this? Now we might say, well, that's the way the ungodly talk. But sometimes the Lord's very own people can be brought to it. They look back and they, well, I have sought to live godly. I have sought to honor God in every way. What is it in my life that I've done to ever deserve this? And the devil can tempt the Lord's people to think that way. Just as Job here, he looks back and verse 26, he says, I looked for good, then evil came upon me. And when I waited for light, there's his patience. Looking, waiting, there's his patience. I looked for good. I thought, well, things are bound to improve. They can't get any worse. My crops are, my flocks are gone. My servants are gone. My family's gone. Things can't get any worse, but they keep getting worse. And I looked for good, and I looked to God for good, then evil. It wasn't just that there was a lack of good. There was positive evil sent. It just got worse and worse. And when I waited, and I waited patiently for light, I thought, well, the darkest hour must have come. There must be light. Surely at the end of the tunnel, there has to be light. And God says, no, Job, you still have to go through the darkness. Because Satan is going to be confounded and you must endure to the end. And here's Job's patience. But God is with him. He says, my bowels boiled and rested not. The days of affliction prevented me. I went mourning without the sun. I stood up and I cried in the congregation. It's as though Job's affliction is so great. He has lost all inhibitions. He just cries out. It doesn't matter who hears him. He can hide nothing. He's just so low. But then you see earlier on, he is speaking of God has become cruel. He's even opposing me. He seems to be opposing me. He's against me now. Just like Jacob. All these things are against me. And yet they weren't. They were for him. But he couldn't see that. Job here is concerned. I cry, verse 20, unto thee, and thou dost not hear me. That's how Job felt. God's not even listening to me. God has just left me. I stand up. I even, you know, to stand was a posture of respect. And Job is saying, I stand before God. I give God respect. I give him honor. I give him his place. I do everything in my power, as it were, to please God. And yet, he seems to be so cruel to me. But this is what we have to note. While Job is speaking this way and thinking this way, the truth of God remains unchangeable. Over in Paul's epistle to the Romans in the chapter 8, he's speaking there of the relationship between God and his people. Job is one of those people. And he's so afflicted and he's so tried that you might begin to conclude, well, Job, I don't know how you'd even profess to be a child of God. But this is what Paul says to the Romans verse 35, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? As it is written, for thy sake we are killed all the day long. It was for God's sake in reality. Job was going through this because Satan had accused God. And he said, you put a fence around Job. And that's why he serves you. That's why he's such a holy man. It's easy for him to be a holy man. You protect him and you've put a hedge around him and you've hedged him in and you're good to him. And God is permitting Job, ordering Job and his purpose to go through this for his glory. Nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. For I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers. Look at what Paul says. Nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers. That's a reference to the satanic powers, the principalities and the powers of darkness, and whatever they may do, and however much affliction they may impose upon the child of God, and the poor child of God may be down in the depths, ready to despair. But it doesn't alter the relationship. It doesn't change one iota that blessed relationship. Nothing could separate Job from the love of God. Now Job didn't know what was going on behind the scenes. Now, he says, this is where I am now. This is what I'm going through this very day. This is my present experience, and I am brought so low, I can only think God is being cruel, and I can only think God is opposed to me. I don't know why, but he must be. And what's God saying? Job, I care for you. Job, my heart is with you, and nothing can separate us. Not even the devil himself can get between us. That's the reality of it. And Job is here in the midst of all his groans and his sighs. This is the fact that all the wiles and all the evil purposes of Satan could never separate Job from God. There was a bond there, a covenant bond, and the compassion of God was toward Job, no matter how low Satan would take him. And that's something that should be a tremendous encouragement. And we need to learn these things because we can easily become censorious and say, well, there must be something seriously wrong, the way God's dealing with him, or the way God's dealing with her, or the way God's dealing with them. And we might be ready to think, well, that man or that woman, they are in a bad way when they think that way, when their mind is thinking that way, and their tongue is expressing those things, and they become critical of God, and they're beginning to accuse God, and it seems this is not right. You've heard of the patience of Job, but alongside the patience of Job is the compassion of God, and alongside of that is God's care. And it was as true with Job as it is for every child of God. Even those dark thoughts, in poor afflicted Job's mind could not alter the fact that nothing could separate him from the love of God which was in Christ Jesus. And these are the things that you can see in the experience of Job. If these were not there, we might be ready to conclude sometimes, well, no one has gone through what I'm going through, and God must have something against me. God was not against Job. God was fully for Job. And Job was, in reality, for God. Here you see the friends have all stopped talking. And they've been accusing him. And they've been standing on the side of God, trying to convince Job. And now Job is left to himself. And you might think, now he'll have peace. No. Job's very soul within him is rent. And his mind is so distracted, as it were. Begins to think things that we would imagine he shouldn't. But God was compassionate. And Job is his child. But we shall leave it there. May the Lord bless his word.